Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. So send us a note if you have an idea or just want to say hi. Our email address is indianaweekend@gmail.com. English professor Karen Kovacic has just finished a two-year term as the Indiana State Poet Laureate. She traveled across the state to promote writing and poetry. We visited her office at IUPUI in Indianapolis the other day. You wouldn't expect the Poet Laureate to earn a giant salary, but Karen says she did get one large benefit from the job.
Well, you know, we're just chatting a minute ago that I'm from the region, from Lake County, and I think for people from that part of Indiana, there's always a sense that we're not really Hoosiers. And I have to say that being Poet Laureate these last 2 years truly helped me become a genuine Hoosier, I think, because I traveled almost to every corner of the state, and I think I had some sort of influence or impact on at least half of Indiana's counties, so about, 45 or more counties. I petted a calf at one poetry festival.
Which is a different experience for somebody from the region, right?
Yeah, that's right. I went to various poetry festivals down in Madison, Indiana. There's something called Poet Palooza, where poets come together from Kentucky, Ohio, and the Hoosier State, and we all have a big meeting down at a wonderful bookstore called Village Lights, run by Nathan Montoya and Ann Vestudo. Has a big portrait of Mark Twain over a baby grand piano, and all the readings kind of occur there.
So you got to see parts of the state that you'd never been to.
That's exactly right. I went to high schools down in Scottsburg and West Salem. Of course, I went up to the region a few times, put on Borderlands readings in Richmond, South Bend, Terre Haute, and back down in Madison. And it was just great.
As a poet laureate, do they have a schedule of these things you do, or do you decide for yourself how best to?
That's a great question. I mean, essentially, there are very few official duties. The Indiana Arts Commission, which oversees this position, asks that we go to the Arts Advocacy Day at the state capitol, which I was able to do my first year, and my second year I had to teach during that time. And also that we serve as judges for the Poetry Out Loud competition, which is sponsored by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Poetry Foundation, and is recitation contest for high school students. So the state competition is always in Indianapolis, and so the Poet Laureate is expected to be one of three or five judges. And that was really a joy to do. Plus, I went around the state trying to drum up more participation in that contest. And last year, in fact, we did have the highest number of high schools participating. I think it was something like 30.
Sounds like fun going around the state talking about something you love.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just great seeing high school students move from being so shy and struggling with memorizing poetry to becoming more confident and almost becoming one with a poem.
You've been teaching for a while. What does the study of poetry or the appreciation of poetry mean for students? Because we're so focused these days on, well, what are the outcomes in terms of jobs that people can get, and how do we tie an education to preparation for a life of work?
One thing is they learn to find language for, I guess, what I would call the inner life, for the sort of deepest currents of the self that maybe otherwise would go unrecorded. They also become, I think, more social, curiously. I mean, that's the stereotype, is that poets, we're all just writing alone in our rooms. But I feel like they work better together. They because we do a lot of in-class writing, in-class critiquing where they work in groups. And I think that creative writing classes often build a great sense of community, you know, so paradoxically they feel less alone as writers, and they actually learn a lot from each other, not just from the teacher. And then, you know, of course they also read a lot in a lot of, you know, published poets in the class. And so it's almost like they have spirit guides or poetic companions who can sort of accompany them on their own life journey, you know. I read an interview with someone from West Point who did a study of graduates from that institution who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, and when asked what in their studies was most helpful to them, they actually said their poetry classes, because I think a former U.S. Poet Laureate Kay Ryan said, among other things, poetry is for desperate occasions. You know, when we are facing possible death, you know, when we are falling in love, when we encounter something ordinary or out of the ordinary, poetry is there to be with us.
We asked Karen to read us one of her poems.
This poem is called The Almanac of Night. Faint drip from the gutter, click, 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 like a wheel being cranked. The house is dark, all asleep but me. In candlelight, the cane plant sways like a date palm in a storm. Where's my hammock? Where's my drunken boat? The books still doze, cloistered on their shelves. Gone the years when rabbits and geese drifted across my flashlit wall. Gone too the days when I couldn't bear the dark. Now I seek the hours before sunup, sowing my unlit plot with kernels of dreams planted by the almanac of night.
Karen Kovacic, an East Chicago native who grew up in Highland, Indiana, in Lake County, and now is professor of English at Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis. She's just finished a 2-year term as Indiana Poet Laureate. The Indiana Arts Commission selected George Calamaris of Fort Wayne, an English professor too, he's at Indiana University, Purdue University, Fort Wayne, as the new Poet Laureate.
Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line to let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Challenge a friend to name an Indiana poet, and they're likely to say, well, James Whitcomb Riley, of course. What you might say is, hey, how about Karen Kovacic, the Indiana Poet Laureate who just completed a 2-year term traveling around the state promoting poetry?
You know, right now I'm teaching 20th century American poetry, so we actually start in the 19th century with Walt Whitman and Emily Dickinson, who are kind of like the great-great-great-grandparents of poets writing today. And there are lots of different currents. So, yeah, I think the growth of the internet and the growth of creative writing programs over the last, say, 2 generations means a lot more poetry is being written today, and a fair amount is being published, because there are a lot of new presses and new journals are cropping up, some of which are electronic, you know, only on the internet, which are providing venues for people to share their work and that sort of thing. So I think that has changed, you know. Might be that we almost write too much, though.
I would say that's true based upon some of the things I've read, but
yeah.
You know, you want to encourage people. I mean, you want them to, maybe we publish too much, you know, maybe.
Yeah, and that might be too. Maybe there are certain things that we should hold closer to the vest. But on the other hand, as the poet W.S. Merwin once said, you know, he was asked about his anti-war poetry during the Vietnam era. And he said, we all of us wrote some terrible poems. You know, but we did stop a war, and the thing about bad poetry is it tends to go away after a little while.
Part of the experience of poetry is the power that it has when spoken. Is that the ideal way to experience it?
For my intro classes, I make something called a How to Read a Poem handout, and I ask that people first of all, just look at the basic shape of the poem on the page, read it silently, and then read it out loud, and then read it silently again. Now, that said, there are certain kinds of poetry, and of course a poet like E.E. Cummings would come to mind, who is so much about the visual arrangement on the page that that is part of the joy of the poem. But for other poets, Robert Frost just had all of his poems memorized. And in fact, you know, the story about his performing at Kennedy's inaugural, I don't know if you heard that story, but he had written a poem for that occasion, but it was so windy that the paper kept whipping around that he ended up just performing from memory a different earlier poem called The Gift Outright, and that's what he did. So for someone like that, the sound really is an echo to the sense, and when the music is everything. For me, as a, you know, when I revise my poems, I always read them out loud, or I hear them in my head out loud, and when the music is off, the poem is off.
Does your best work, do you revise it so much that you just know it?
Yeah, in some cases I do, but I tend more to memorize the work of other people, you know, and kind of have that with me as I go about my life, you know, and kind of when certain moods come up or certain occasions, those poems or lines of those poems are just with me.
The idea of poetry has changed so much. I think of Taylor Molly, the former teacher.
Yes,
who
I love him. Yeah.
Seventh grade Viking warrior.
Right. The impotence of proofreading.
His performance, there's so much in it. The words are only the starting point.
That's right. I mean, you know, he uses his whole body. His way of interacting with the audience is just a whole part of the art. He's phenomenal.
So people like Taylor Molly might be an entry point into the art that might not otherwise be there.
Well, that's right. And there's a whole what's called a spoken word tradition, which has some roots in rap and hip hop, where people memorize a lot of their poems and often use end rhyme and write about issues. There tends to be a lot of political engagement in that work. There actually is an Indiana Slam team that meets on a regular basis and has competed outside of the state. So those are other points of entry. And you know, of course, Molly was a National Poetry Slam champion himself and appeared in the film Slam Nation.
When I was in school a long time ago, we had to memorize certain things in Flanders Fields and bits of Shakespeare. Are today's students getting that experience as well?
Well, you know, the Poetry Out Loud competition requires that students memorize the work of other poets. And there's a list of, I think it's about 600 or 700 approved poems from which they choose. And some of them are like, you know, in Flanders Field. Some of them are, you know, a Shakespearean sonnet or whatever. And then there's very contemporary work, too, on that list. In my classes, in certain classes, I require students to memorize. And with this generation, a lot of people have anxiety about that because things that we would, you know, remember, like phone numbers or whatever, they don't have to remember anymore. So I think there's a little bit more anxiety about the act of memorization with this group of students. But, you know, they do, and I teach them some little techniques for how to remember.
That's Karen Kovacic, the outgoing Indiana Poet Laureate. We asked her to read us one of her poems.
This poem is about falling in love with the gory, beautiful, strange world of fairy tales as a child. It's called Reading the Brothers Grimm. She'd never seen a raven or a flounder. No musician ever charmed her out of speech, nor had she lost her way in a forest. Thus, no woodcutter rescued her, and her little sister did not become a magpie. No prince shimmied up her short ponytail. No tyrant ordered her to spin flax till her fingers bled. She had many wishes, but no talking fish made them come true. She did not have seven brothers. No one kissed her awake. She didn't dance till her soles were paper thin. Her parents never built her
a coffin. Though once she wanted to die, not like a princess on a bier of glass, but like a servant cast down a well. Still she lived on in thorn-covered bowers. Daily she foraged in thickets of ink. And when the giant smelled her blood, she fled not to a gingerbread house studded with poisoned sugar plums, but to strongholds of sharp black words.
Karen Kovacic, a professor of English at Indiana University, Purdue University at Indianapolis, who just finished a 2-year term as Indiana Poet Laureate. She has a WordPress blog, and if you'd like a link to that, just go to our Indiana Weekend page on Facebook.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
The Indiana Arts Commission selected George Calamaris of Fort Wayne, an English professor at IPFW, as the state's new Poet Laureate. It's a 2-year term that began this month. Calamaris succeeds Karen Kovacic, another English professor from Indianapolis. We wanted to know how she enjoyed her term as top poet and went to her office at IUPUI.
In your classes, do you ever talk about what is art? What is good poetry? I mean, there's good poetry, bad poetry. How can you tell the difference?
I'm sort of old-fashioned in this regard, but I like there to be a certain music to the poetic line, even if it's free verse. You know, I like poetry that is rich in imagery, that contains memorable language, that where the statement or the impetus for the poem goes beyond the surface meaning, you know, yet is still clear and resonant.
Do you find yourself quoting snippets of poetry by way of example as you're talking with the students?
Well, what I do is I assign a lot of poetry, and so we're reading a lot in the classes, and then we discuss them, and we unpack them. We look at very specific features. You know, for example, we were in class the other night. We were looking at a poem called 31-Year-Old Lover by the poet Kim Adonisio, who lives in Oakland. And the speaker is probably a 40-something woman who is dating a 31-year-old guy. And at one point, she's admiring him, and she breaks into Latin at phrase, actual Latin anatomical phrases like latissimus dorsi or gastric nemius. And so we had a conversation about that. You know, why in this poem where she is eroticizing a person does she break into Latin? And we had a good conversation about that.
So you like to have students memorize some good works.
That's right. Well, and they are, you know, they may be select a poem from our textbook, and usually my requirement is that it's sonnet length or longer. So a lot of people will stick with the 14 lines, you know. And sonnets, especially, you know, traditional rhymed sonnets, are pretty easy to memorize because the rhyme is your friend when you, as you know. But then, once I had a guy who memorized a beat poet's sort of long poem, Gregory Corso's Marriage, which is just this almost like stand-up comedy routine about being afraid to get married, you know, and going to the girlfriend's house and being interrogated by the parents on the third-degree sofa and that sort of thing. It was like, you know, 2.5-page poem. The guy did it brilliantly and, you know, received a standing ovation.
What's the difference between the poems that many people of an earlier generation, and I'm thinking Invictus here,
yes,
and everything that says and everything, is there a today equivalent of something that is so...
In fact, Invictus is on the approved list for Poetry Out Loud, and a lot of young men in particular, and some young women at the schools I visited, had selected that poem. So it still it still speaks to young people. And I must say that it kind of surprised me. I was thinking that, you know, in many ways, ours is such an ironic age. And I thought that maybe that poem would not speak to young people. But I guess I sensed a hunger for a credo like that.
Karen was kind enough to read us one of her poems.
This poem is about the statues of the Buddha that were unfortunately blown up some years ago in Afghanistan. And it starts with a quotation from a Zen poet, Ryokan, and it goes like this. If we gain something, it was there from the beginning. If we lose something, it is hidden nearby. This poem is called Requiem for the Buddhas of Bamiyan. Between the Empire of China and the Empire of Rome, in an oasis along the Silk Road, you heard pomegranates change hands in Latin and Farsi and Greek. Chinese generals, Persian merchants, inventors of gunpowder and algebra, fanciers of rhubarb and bronze, all conducted their commerce in your shadow. You who saw monasteries cut from mountains, you who were sculpted out of sandstone, who listened to the whispers of Christians, who welcomed Muslims and Manichaeans, disciples of Nestor and Zoroaster. Leopards and lions rolled past you in their cages, actors mimicked peacocks and parrots, travelers who'd thirsted through the Taklamakan Desert gave thanks to plural gods. You who survived Genghis Khan's cannon, who saw the British retreat, then Soviets and Americans. You whom the Taliban ringed with burning tires, blackening your face. You with dynamite in your groin. You witnessed to starving farmers, to secret schools for girls. For 14 centuries you stood fast, still as Siddhartha, on the night of his enlightenment, as much a part of this valley as the wind. Who will know you now by your absence, remembering your before? When the night comes, who will know you? When the ash falls, who will know you? After earthquakes and eclipses, wherever there is fire, how to feel you filling us and leaving us, abiding in the grottos of our breath.
That's outgoing State Poet Laureate Karen Kovacic. You can find links to her work on our Facebook page, along with links to some Taylor Molly and Gregory Corso and the marriage poem. And that, friends, is our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop us a note with your favorite verse at indianaweekend@gmail.com. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss of the Ball State Journalism Department. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Marcus Jackman. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from Dillman's Furniture, Muncie, serving East Central Indiana with home furnishings from Flex Steel, Bassett, and Simmons Beauty Rest. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.